forgiveness. I know it's a volatile subject. I know it's a sensitive subject. But the reason I brought it up was because last week I was talking, I went to do a keynote speech, and one of my fellow speakers was a guy called Chris Lubb, who was a bodyguard for Nelson Mandela. And I'm a big fan of Nelson Mandela. What I love about Mandela was that he was the prodigal son. He was an activist. He became a terrorist. He went to prison for nearly 30 years, and he realised while he was in prison that we don't get rid of black by adding black. We don't get rid of sin by adding sin. We don't get rid of violence by adding violence. He realised that the only way we were going to grow as a species and evolve as a species and expand as a species was to work at a different level, a different frequency. And he discovered, what I love about him was that he did try that route. He went down the route of violence. He tried to get rid of violence by adding violence, and it just added to the violence. And when he came out of prison, he said, we've got to do this a different way. And not everybody liked what he was saying, but he did it and he lived it. When I had the chance to have an hour with Chris and we spoke, I felt like I was talking to Mandela himself. And he said, Mandela said that unforgiveness is like drinking poison and then expecting our enemy to drop dead. He was basically saying that we can't deliver anger and violence without first processing it in every cell of our body. We can't deliver violence without being violent. So when we hold anger, when we hold rage, when we hold grudge, when we hold fear, when we hold the pain of, the abuse that we've suffered, every part of us is infused with that caustic cocktail. And he's saying the only way that we're going to get past that is to go to another level and find the level of forgiveness. And what he said he found was, one of the things Chris said was that when he was in prison, there's two big things happened to Mandela. And I'm sure Chris wouldn't mind me sharing them. He shares them in his amazing talks. If you look him up online, his name's Chris Lubb, Lubbe. He's an amazing man. Two things happened to Mandela. One was, he had a moment of clarity where he heard God. He said the guards were very abusive towards him and the other inmates. They made him dig a six-foot pit, put him in the pit, buried him up to the neck in the pit, and then all of the guards pissed on his head. And then one of the guards picked up a shovel like this and pulled it back to whack Nelson Mandela in the head. And Nelson Mandela said he knew he was dead. He knew that if the shovel landed, he was dead. And he said a voice in his head spoke to him and said, don't worry, he won't be able to hit you with that shovel. And as the guy pulled the shovel back, he tried to bring it forward but was unable to do it. And all the other guards were saying, hit him, kill him, take his head off with that shovel. But every time he pulled it back, he just couldn't, for some reason, it was just stuck in the air. And this voice said, he will not be able to strike you with that. And Nelson Mandela knew then, at that moment, that there was a divine plan and that he was part of that divine plan. He wasn't privy to what that divine plan was, only that he needed to work at a higher frequency. Then he started to inquire about the abuse he was getting. He was getting lots of abuse in prison by young jailers. And he just thought, he realised that these people that were abusing him didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what they were doing. They were acting from conditioning. They were acting from what they were being told. They rationalised their abuse because it's what they knew. It's what they believed. It was what was on their perception. They were just acting on what someone had told them before. He realised they were working unconsciously. And because they were working unconsciously, he said he couldn't blame them for what they were doing. He just found complete forgiveness for them. In other words, he understood why they were doing it, a bit like Jesus on the cross when he talks about the two people that were accusing him either side on the cross and the people that condemned him to death. Forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. They literally don't know what they're doing. They say that we have 100 trillion cells in our body and they're all led by perception. Every one of these cells is a microcosm of us. It's a miniature version of us, and it all, every cell is waiting for our command. But 95% of the, they're all led by perception, but 95% of the perception they're led by is unconscious. So most people live most of their life unconsciously. So their perceptions that they've inherited, or their perceptions that they've learned, are unconscious. So they're just automatically doing things. So they've no free will at all. They may have 5% of their perceptions that's trying to change things, but they're battling against 95%, and they're not even aware that it's unconscious. So Mandela's concept was that we have to change the 95%. And the only way we can change the 95% in other people is to change it in ourselves. And that's what the prison experience allowed him to see. These people don't know what they're doing. It doesn't mean what they were doing is right. It doesn't mean what they're doing can be excused. It just means they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. And it's much easier to forgive people when you know that they don't know what they're doing. And you, of course, you also start to realise they have no idea that when they bring hate, when they deliver hate, when they deliver anger, when they deliver violence, every part of them is infused with anger and hate and violence. We can't deliver violence without producing violence in our body. So every cell of our body, 100 trillion versions of us, are filled and infused by hate. Which means when I'm with my children, that resonates into my children. When I'm with my wife, it resonates into my wife. When I'm with my pupils or my students or my friends, it resonates into them. When I'm writing, it resonates there. It means everything you touch is touched by what's in you. So he said they don't know what they're doing. They don't know that what they're doing is caustic to themselves. So when we say what you do to others is what you do to yourself, it's a literal. It's literal. When we're angry with other people, we fill with anger. Everybody is filled with that caustic cocktail. And it's literally, it's caustic. It's caustic to all the smooth internal muscles like the heart, the lungs, the brain cells, the bladder. You know, any soft muscle on the inside, the arteries, everything is affected by cortisol and by the caustic cocktail of anger and violence. So when we deliver vitriol and anger and judgment, we fill ourselves with that cocktail. It makes no sense intellectually, but because it's unconscious, people continue to do it, and they continue to feel good about it, and they go out and they do all these terrible things thinking that they can escape the consequence of what they're doing. But of course we can't. How can you escape the consequence when you've already produced the consequence in your body? If I'm violent to you, I fill with violence. My body is a cocktail of violence. My smooth internal muscles, this beautiful machine, is corroded by what I've produced. It can't not be. It makes no sense. That's why I won't hold anger for anybody. I won't hold hate for anybody. I won't hold judgment for anybody. I refuse to. And if fear comes up in my life, then I'll work on dissolving it as quickly as possible. I just don't engage it. I don't identify with it. Sometimes it catches you, of course. Sometimes you have a pilot light and you run away with it, but you come back and you dissolve it quickly. What we do to others is what we do to ourselves. You know, so it makes sense to be kind, because then we've got to fill 100 trillion cells worth of kindness. It makes sense to be generous, because then we've got to fill 100 trillion cells with generosity. It makes sense to be, to give love, because to give love, I've got to be the conduit for love, which means every one of my 100 trillion cells is satiated with that love. So this isn't, I'm not talking about a sickly sweet theological argument. I'm talking about, you know, the psychology, the psychiatry, the physiological, the spiritual effects of how we are. So it makes sense to be generous. It makes sense to be kind. And it makes sense to forgive. Because when we forgive, we're saying, it doesn't mean what this person has done is wrong. It just means that they don't know what they're doing. Nobody with any sense would damage themselves in order to damage somebody else. You know, it would make no sense at all. If people knew what they're doing, they just wouldn't do it. But they don't know they're doing it. One of the interesting things with Chris was he said they didn't just, you know, because Mandela, when he came into power, he brought in four black bodyguards and four white bodyguards. And the four white bodyguards were the former bodyguards to the former president. And they had tortured the bodyguards, the black bodyguards that Nelson Mandela brought in. So Chris was one of them. And he said, listen, I can't work with these guys. These guys tortured us. These guys imprisoned us. One of these guys tortured me for 4 days with waterboarding and all sorts of horrendous stuff. And Mandela said, this is where we start. We've got to start by forgiving the people, you know, by forgiving the people that have done the most wrong to us. And he didn't just say, just forgive them. He said, we will go through a period of truth and reconciliation. Truth and reconciliation meant conversations. It meant talking. It meant saying, why are you doing that? Why did you do that? Why? What part of you thought that was okay? So they go through truth and reconciliation so that they can process what's happened to them. And at some point come to the conclusion that people don't know what they've done. They don't know why they've done it. I've had people who have attacked me, people that I love. And when I've cornered them and saying, why would you do that to yourself? Why would you do that when you know that we love you? Why would you do that when it's clearly below your game? You recognise by talking to them and by conversing with them that they don't know what they're doing. And they recognise when you're talking to them, they didn't know what they were doing. It was an unconscious thing, something that they have to live with themselves. So they went through a period of truth and reconciliation in order to find that forgiveness. Forgiveness was a process, but ultimately forgiveness meant cleansing perception, cleansing cognition. If I hold a grudge, I hold anger, I hold fear, I hold hate, it means I've got a caustic cocktail of damaging chemicals on tap. Every time I feel a pilot light of rage, my body fills with a chemical cocktail that is caustic to my whole body. Every time I do that, that perception is slowly damaging and killing me. It makes no sense intellectually. So we start practicing sitting at a higher level. We start practicing forgiveness, but not in the sense of letting people off. We need to go through truth and reconciliation. The person that sexually abused me when I was 12, you know, we tried to take him to court. We tried to, you know, to get justice. We tried to go through all those routes. That, you know, people still need to have their day in court. It's not about letting people off. It's just about letting people go. It's about exorcising them from your perception, exorcising them from your cognition. And you may have to go through your own period of truth and reconciliation to understand that. Even if that's an internal badinage, even if that's an internal conversation, it's still really important. But forgiveness is a metaphysical power, because when we forgive, we cleanse perception, we cleanse cognition, we expand our second self. We forgive people because they don't know what they've done. We forgive people because they don't know why they're doing it. We forgive people because they're not aware that when they've tried to damage you, or when they have damaged you, they've massively damaged and altered their own life. So equally, we need to forgive ourselves, because we all make mistakes. Everyone's made mistakes. If you've read any of my books, you'll know that I've got a reservoir of mistakes behind me. I've damaged a lot of people. I've had to forgive myself. I've had to forgive myself, and it's easy to forgive myself when I know I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I thought I was doing the right thing when I was a doorman and being violent. I realised I wasn't doing the right thing. I was being violent because my perception was that the world was dangerous and I needed to protect myself against the world. That was a wrong perception. It was unconscious. It rose up and I went out and did terrible things. And at some point I've had to find my own truth and reconciliation with myself. I did everything wrong in my first marriage. You name it, I did it wrong. I was not a good person. If you met me, you would have thought I was a nice person, but I didn't trust the world and I didn't trust myself. I wasn't a good person. I was a damaged person and I damaged other people. But that was unconscious. I didn't know what I was doing. And that's what enables me to forgive myself. Forgiving myself enables me to cleanse cognition, cleanse perception. It enables me to erase karma, enables me to expand and go out into the world and live from a place of freedom. Free will. Free will to me is the ability to be able to make yourself do the things you're afraid to do. And it gives me the ability to stop myself from doing the things that I know are not good for me and that are not good for other people. So people talk about challenges. If you want a real challenge, if you want a pseudo challenge, go and climb a mountain. If you want a real challenge, go inside and start working on the internal jihad, on the battle with the ego, the battle with the perceptions, the battle with conditioning, the battle with the social mores. You know, people, the perception can be changed, and in changing perception, realities change, but perception is like addiction. It will fight for its life. So there's the real battle. That's worth getting up in the morning for. Let me tell you this about me. When I'm sat in the dark on my own at night, I know who I am. I know who I am. So what we have to ask ourselves is, if we're watching this, do you know who you are? Who are you? How many people are you? How many different personalities are you? Find out who you're not. Cleanse them. Align them, bring them into alignment, and just work on who you are, your best game, your best potential, working from your strongest place, your unique signature. This is what I'm learning this week. This is what I've learned from working with Chris, that to be unforgiving is to drink poison and hope your enemy will drop dead. It doesn't make sense intellectually. So it's just a good practice. It's good to look at. When we forgive, we exorcise demons from our cognition. And when I say demon, I mean a divide. The word demon comes from the word divide. It means when situations and truths divide us, we divide it against ourselves. Our job is to become unified and absolute. And we're only going to do that if we find out who we are. And the only way we're going to find out who we are is by finding out, first of all, who we're not. And we don't have to look far to do that. Look in the mirror. Look at your networking pages. Look at the social media. Look at how you are with your friends. How are you with your wife? How are you with your children? How are you with your friends? How are you with the down and out in the street? You know, who lights your pilot light? Who triggers that for you? You know, the teachers are all around us. The biggest teacher is probably the girl you're lying in bed next to, or the lad you're lying in bed next to, or your mother, or your sister, or your brother. The biggest teaches you, and the greatest intelligence comes from knowing who you are. That's what I continue to practice on. I know who I am, just finessing that and gradually letting go of who I'm not, which is, you know, that's a lifelong battle.